From the Voice of America in Washington, this is VOA Global. I'm Ira Melman, along with Jim Stevenson. On today's program, Jim will talk with the author of a book dealing with the Sino-Soviet alliance and some recently disclosed documents that detail what really happened in the past. Hong Kong authorities clear the site of what had been a massive protest in city streets, and they make some arrests as well. A U.S. agency threatens to take action against a Japanese airbag maker. In the American Cafe, we talk with some New Yorkers about what Thanksgiving means to them. David Byrd tells us all about Operation Smile. We check business and sports news as well. All of that and more today on this edition of VOA Global from the Voice of America.
This is Daybreak Asia, a summary of Asian news and events for Thursday, November 27th. Welcome in. I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, authorities in Hong Kong have arrested two pro-democracy protest leaders as police moved Wednesday to clear another protest site. Shannon Van Sant joins us with more from Beijing.
Police Wednesday arrested Joshua Wong and Lester Shum, two of the leaders who helped start the Occupy Central demonstrations that have blocked some of Hong Kong's streets since the pro-democracy protest began 2 months ago. Police also moved to clear one of the key protest sites in Hong Kong's Mong Kok district. Pa Sha is one of the protesters demonstrating daily in Hong Kong.
And actually, the brutality and the damage to the protesters are actually higher. And there have been a lot of cases where police attacked and injured a lot of occupiers. So it shows that the police brutality is very apparent.
In Mong Kok, police were acting on a court injunction to clear the district's Argyle Street. Confrontations between police and protesters continued throughout the night Tuesday, and around 80 workers began removing barricades in the neighborhood by early morning. The workers and police initially faced resistance from demonstrators who chanted for full democracy in the city. Police dragged away and arrested many protesters who refused to move. In October, Mong Kok was the site of violent clashes between protesters and thugs who attacked them. Police later said the thugs were members of local criminal gangs. Wednesday's effort to clear Mong Kok inflamed passions of some demonstrators, like Roland.
I don't know who they are, but probably they are hired by the authority to clear this zone.
Public opinion in Hong Kong has been divided over the protest. Many residents say the demonstrations, which have blocked traffic and damaged sales at nearby shops and stores, have taken an economic toll on the city. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
Following the recent United Nations resolution condemning the dire human rights situation in North Korea, the South Korean parliament is now considering taking action on the issue. VOA's Brian Patton has more from Seoul. He says the situation has revived a long-standing debate in the South over how to effect change in the North.
The two major political parties in South Korea have somewhat diametrically opposed views on North Korea. The ruling conservative Saenuri Party supports cautious dealings with the secretive and authoritarian Kim Jong-un regime. The bill it is sponsoring in parliament would provide funding for North Korean human rights and civics groups operating in South Korea and would empower the Justice Ministry to document human rights violations in North Korea. Choi Young-song, a Secretary General of Network for North Korean Democracy and Human Rights, supports this bill. He says basically the government must cooperate with North Korea by having talks, but it also needs to punish if North Korea provokes. The more liberal New Politics Alliance for Democracy Party believes that outside agitation and condemnation will only further isolate the regime. Its bill supports increased engagement with North Korea, offering humanitarian aid and economic cooperation to bring about change. Moon Jae-in is a leader of this opposition party and a former presidential candidate.
우리 야당의 생각은
He says what his opposition party thinks is that the North Korean Human Rights Bill and the support of the South Korean government must be effective. Moon Jae-in specifically opposes any government funding for North Korean defector groups that have been launching balloons filled with anti-regime leaflets across the border. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
The recent sharp fall in oil prices has been pretty good for most everybody, including Asian economies, enabling governments to ease costly fuel subsidies. Ron Corbin reports for VOA from Bangkok that analysts say lower prices are also easing payment pressures in oil import-dependent economies in the face of expected higher global interest rates for 2015.
Economists say a 25% fall in international oil prices since July is lifting Asia's economic prospects because of the region's heavy dependence on imported fuel to drive growth. Economists say the benefits from lower oil import bills also ease international payment pressures, with more money in the pockets of consumers and less price inflation. The benchmark Brent crude oil has fallen to below $80 a barrel, sharply down from market levels of more than $108 in December 2011. The price of liquefied natural gas LNG, used widely across Asia, including Japan, is linked to Brent crude. Andrew Calhoun, senior director with the Hong Kong-based Fitch Ratings, says regional economies will gain from the windfall.
Most Asia-Pacific economies are oil importers, and therefore the decline in oil prices is kind of equivalent to a kind of income gain for them. And the impact depends on whether they save or spend the income gain.
Fitch Ratings, in a recent analyst report, says most major Asian economies, including China, Japan, Korea and Thailand, would see an effective overall income boost from sustained lower oil prices. Thailand's oil import bill accounts for 15% of national income, the largest relative cost burden in the region. Again, a backdrop of lower global prices, Indonesia, Malaysia and Thailand all are moving to reduce oil price subsidies, often a major element in government spending. Earlier this month, Indonesian Prime Minister Joko Widodo raised subsidized fuel prices by over 30%. The politically sensitive move led to criticism by trade unions and opposition parties. But the government says it is providing social assistance to over 15 million people to ease the impact of higher fuel costs. Gareth Leather, an economist with the London-based Capital Markets, says that for Indonesia, while there will be a short-term impact, the savings will allow more public spending and boost investor confidence that President Widodo is serious about economic reform.
Longer term, I think it is a good move from Indonesia's perspective. First of all, it's going to free up quite a bit of money from the government's perspective. So it doesn't have to, at the moment, I think it spends like 20% of its annual budget on fuel subsidies, which is a huge waste.
Economists say the lower fuel costs has already added to a positive outlook for Asia next year, with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, saying the region will remain the fastest growing in the global economy. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Join me again tomorrow for another Daybreak Asia, which comes to you every weekday on VOA Global, and it's a podcast. Subscribe to it at voanews.com.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman, and this is your segment. We welcome your feedback, your ideas, what you think about some of the stories. And, Jim, we have our poll that continues.
That's right. APEC meetings concluded in Beijing. And on our VOAnews.com poll, we asked, what do you think the APEC summit meetings will do to improve the U.S.-China and China-Japan relations? We had a variety of responses to our questions. This will prompt long-term positive change. That's what 20% of you thought. 45% responded, this won't fix anything. There's a potential for positive relations, but we'll have to wait and see. 30% of you chose that, and 5% were unsure. Please go to our website and vote on our polls.
45% saying this won't fix anything. Well, on the story of Veterans Day in America, a listener on Weibo said, He read our story and had watched a lot of video of history lessons on YouTube to learn about the history of World War I. Said he didn't learn about the history until after he left school. He felt history education in Chinese schools inadequate. During President Obama's visit to the APEC summit in Beijing, he gave a speech to let China know of the U.S.'s goodwill toward them and announced that the U.S. would be extending visas for Chinese nationals. Sonia Mia said on Facebook, this is good news. Zarmal Hotak said on Facebook, this is going to be useful, this visit for Obama.
More boats than fishermen in typhoon-hit Philippines 1 year after the super typhoon shattered millions of people's lives in the central Philippines. The storm still affecting some. Van Dat Nguyen said on Facebook, climate change has affected our lives seriously. We invite your comments. Go to our webpage or write to us at voaasia@voanews.com. This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. Coming up, we've got an author segment.
Is that all you do when you go home is just read these books?
Yeah, well, also, I call up the authors and I ask them about it because there's always more to the story than just what is written down in the book. You know, China hasn't had a really large military conflict in over 40 years. Nobody really knows what China's military capability is right now, but we're going to find out next.
China's growing influence in the world has included expanding military capabilities. While we could never fully know all of China's abilities, we can examine circumstantial evidence to build a good framework of knowledge about the strengths and limitations that we could expect to see from China. I'm Jim Stevenson with Authors on Asia. We open the book today with Tai Ming Chung, director of the University of California Institute on Global Conflict and Cooperation in San Diego, California. He, along with several colleagues, has been assessing China's level of defense technology innovation. Their findings are in the new book, Forging China's Military Might, to which Tai Ming Chung contributed and edited.
The book comes out of a long-term research project that I've been in charge on, funded by the U.S. Defense Department a number of years ago, to look at some of the long-term security challenges for the U.S. The initiative, entitled the Minerva Initiative, funds social science research to look at these big security questions.
The subtitle of the book is A New Framework for Assessing Innovation. China has long been criticized for copying, stealing, emulating. How much innovation is really going on within their military at this point?
The Chinese actually have a fairly clear-cut strategy. They call this the IDAR strategy, which is they introduce, which is they bring in, they digest, they assimilate, re-innovate. And the key part about understanding Chinese innovation itself is that there's two types of innovations that the Chinese are trying to choose, especially in the defense sphere, but also more broadly. One is what they call just good enough innovation, where it's like they don't need to have like a really advanced, sophisticated approach, but it's having technological capabilities that are just good enough, that are cost-effective, that match the characteristics of their country. Or the other approach, which is what the U.S. and the more advanced countries produce, is the breakthrough, the gold-plated type of innovation, the very, very like frontier type of innovation. And the Chinese are doing that, but that's not where a lot of their focus is. Their focus is on just good enough right now.
In terms of military, if you're behind, it must be very difficult to bring yourself up to par with, you know, the leaders out there. And if China is a catch-up nation, can they ever hope to really catch up with, say, the U.S. military?
It's a very long-term approach. I mean, the Chinese have only been really seriously engaged in this catch-up technology and innovation effort in the last 20 odd years. And so what they see is that there's different races that the Chinese are pursuing. There's the immediate race where they're worried about their external security environment, where it's dealing with Japan or the U.S. strategic pivot or Taiwan or these like immediate concerns.
Innovation isn't limited to just having the biggest and baddest toys out there on the planet. It's also knowing how to use them. And China, I would imagine, is also trying to work on that front to better use and utilize what they do have.
That is a big issue, and this is something that China's new leader, Xi Jinping, talks about often. Xi Jinping has been in power for the last 14, 15 months, and whenever he goes to talk to the Chinese military or he goes to their defense science and technology factories and laboratories, he talks about, well, we come up with these really good capabilities and technologies, but we really have to know how to use it, because if China gets into war, we need to be prepared to be able to win. And that's the conundrum that the Chinese military faces.
Tai Ming Chung, editor and contributor to the book Forging China's Military Might, A New Framework for Assessing Innovation. It's published by Johns Hopkins. I'm Jim Stevenson. We'll pull another volume from our bookshelves next Thursday, and you may hear more authors on Asia on VOA Global, or anytime by visiting the voanews.com website.
I'm Sarah Williams with China Focus. Hong Kong authorities Wednesday arrested two pro-democracy leaders as police moved to clear another protest site. Shannon Van Sant reports from Beijing.
Police Wednesday arrested Joshua Wong and Lester Shum, two of the leaders who helped start the Occupy Central demonstrations that have blocked some of Hong Kong's streets since the pro-democracy protest began 2 months ago. Police also moved to clear one of the key protest sites in Hong Kong's Mong Kok district. Pa Sha is one of the protesters demonstrating daily in Hong Kong.
And actually, the brutality and the damage to the protesters are actually higher. And there have been a lot of cases where police attacked and injured a lot of occupiers. So it shows that the police brutality is very apparent.
In Mong Kok, police were acting on a court injunction to clear the district's Argyle Street. Confrontations between police and protesters continued throughout the night Tuesday, and around 80 workers began removing barricades in the neighborhood by early morning. The workers and police initially faced resistance from demonstrators who chanted for full democracy in the city. Police dragged away and arrested many protesters who refused to move. In October, Mong Kok was the site of violent clashes between protesters and thugs who attacked them. Police later said the thugs were members of local criminal gangs. Wednesday's effort to clear Mong Kok inflamed passions of some demonstrators, like Roland.
I don't know who they are, but probably they are hired by the authority to clear this zone. But I would like to insist that the occupied zone is the expression of the people's voice. You know, the government shouldn't do this.
Public opinion in Hong Kong has been divided over the protest. Many residents say the demonstrations, which have blocked traffic and damaged sales at nearby shops and stores, have taken an economic toll on the city. Leadership of the protest has also become increasingly split between moderates and more extreme activists who demand radical action. Pa Sha says while the protesters may be divided, the government's position is clear.
I think the government is trying to arrest the leaders to basically try to deal with the movement once and for all, and try to showed a very hardline stance against the movement.
Protesters have been asking for direct elections of the city's leader. In August, China's central government proposed that Hong Kong elect the chief executive from a pool of two or three candidates chosen by a 1,200-person committee backed by Beijing loyalists. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
Meanwhile, Hong Kong police said Wednesday that seven police officers accused of beating a protester last month were formally arrested on suspicion of assault. The seven officers were suspended after they allegedly beat protester Ken Sang in the Admiralty District. The video of the beating generated condemnation in Hong Kong and on the internet. Police said they are continuing to investigate the incident. The latest unrest in Hong Kong coincides with protests in Ferguson, Missouri. Some of the town's residents are outraged that a grand jury this week decided not to indict a white police officer for shooting dead an unarmed black teenager in August. The protests have spread across the United States. On the Chinese microblog website Weibo, one observer posted, "There is a democracy called the United States, and there is a suppression called the six-barrel shotgun." And it included photos of U.S. police clashing with demonstrators in Ferguson. U.S. authorities have often criticized China for its human rights policies. Follow us on Weibo. That's China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams.
From the Voice of America in Washington, I'm Ira Melman with Jim Stevenson, and this is Asia Business. Asian stock markets mostly posted modest gains Wednesday as stronger U.S. growth was tempered by a less rosy outlook for China. Hong Kong's Hang Seng rose 0.1% to 23,857. Australia's S&P ASX 200 added 0.9%, 5380. Japan's Nikkei 225 dropped 0.1% to 17,388, and China's Shanghai Composite rose 0.6% to 2582. Seoul's KOSPI inched up less than 0.1% to 1980. The U.S. economy grew at a solid 3.9% annual rate in the July-September period, faster than the 3.5% that was initially reported, underlining its status as the only major economy that is gathering momentum.
The Chinese government has charged Microsoft $140 million in back taxes and interest in the latest case of a U.S. technology group coming under regulatory scrutiny in the country. A report about the tax ruling in Xinhua, the official Chinese news agency, did not mention Microsoft by name, but said that a company beginning with the letter M and with an identical financial profile to the Seattle-based group had been penalized for transfer pricing. The company declined to clarify what period the tax payment covered and refused to provide any further detail. Most likely Microsoft not too anxious to click that pay now button.
Well, could be any company with an M, right? A dispute between U.S. safety regulators and airbag maker Takata Corporation escalated Wednesday when the government threatened fines and legal action by the U.S. if the company fails to admit that driver-side airbag inflators are defective and agrees to a nationwide recall. There you have it, a look at Asian business news from the Voice of America.
This is Today in History. On November 27th, 1095, Pope Urban II launched the First Crusade by appealing for a Christian army to defeat the Turks and take control of Jerusalem. On this day in 1701, Swedish astronomer Anders Celsius was born. He is best known for devising the Celsius temperature scale. In 1895, Swedish chemist and explosives maker Alfred Nobel signed his last will and testament, setting aside much of his estate to establish the Nobel Prizes that are still awarded annually. On this day in 1954, former U.S. State Department employee Alger Hiss was released from prison after serving 44 months for perjury. Hiss was convicted of lying about his complicity in a scheme to pass secret government documents to the Soviet Union. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
This is VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. It's Thanksgiving here in the United States, a traditional holiday when families get together and give thanks for just being together and for all the blessings that we've had.
Yep. Guy is named Joey Chestnut. He is a competitive eater. Makes a lot of money, usually eating hot dogs. He downs like, what, 30 to 50 of them?
Right, during the Independence Day holiday.
So they decided at the Foxwood Resort Casino in Connecticut to see how much a group of people, how much turkey that they could eat. And Joey Chestnut won. He ate most of a 20-pound turkey in the competition Saturday. Precisely 9.35 pounds of meat off the bone in 10 minutes. According to Major League Eating, the equivalent of the NFL, he bested the previous record held by Sonia Thomas.
Let me guess, he's almost 10 pounds heavier now.
Yeah.
From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. NATO worries mount over eastern Ukraine and Russian militarization of Crimea. Protests continued in Ferguson, Missouri, and spread to other cities. The Ebola death toll climbs. These and other stories coming up. I'm Ray Kugel. The top U.S. general in Europe says he is alarmed at Russia's actions in Crimea and by provocative military flights in NATO airspace. Jamie Detmer reports from Kiev.
General Philip Breedlove, head of the U.S. European Command and NATO Supreme Allied Commander, told reporters here in Kiev after meetings with Ukrainian leaders that he's alarmed at the Russian militarization of the Black Sea Peninsula of Crimea, which Moscow annexed from Ukraine in March.
We are very concerned with the militarization of Crimea. We're concerned that the capabilities in Crimea that are being installed will bring effect to almost the entire Black Sea.
The general said the military buildup by Moscow includes cruise and surface-to-air missiles able to exert, as he put it, military influence on the region. Breedlove also voiced worry about the nature of provocative Russian military flights being flown over NATO countries, although he stressed the flights are in international airspace. According to NATO officials, alliance pilots have conducted over 100 intercepts of Russian aircraft this year, about three times more than in 2013, an interception rate reminiscent of the Cold War. Tensions have been running high between NATO and Russia since Moscow began backing an insurgency by pro-Kremlin militants in eastern Ukraine. Jamie Detmer, VOA News, Kiev.
Several U.S. cities are recovering from a night of protests Tuesday following a grand jury's decision not to indict a white police officer in the death of an unarmed black teenager in Ferguson, Missouri. The August shooting death of 18-year-old Michael Brown by Officer Darren Wilson inflamed tensions in Ferguson and raised concerns about police violence and racial discrimination in a mostly black St. Louis suburb. Ferguson residents swept up debris, boarded up broken windows, and assessed damages Wednesday after police fired tear gas on protesters Tuesday and arrested 44 people. More than 2,000 National Guard soldiers were deployed Tuesday night in Ferguson to guard against new violence. Riots broke out there Monday after the announcement that charges would not be filed against Wilson. Protesters marched through New York City's Times Square in the historically black neighborhood of Harlem, attempting to block bridges and tunnels leading into the city. Police used pepper spray to control crowds. In Oakland, California, protesters stopped traffic on a major highway, and in Atlanta, Georgia, police arrested 21 protesters who were blocking traffic. Police used pepper spray on marchers in Denver, Colorado, and Portland, Oregon. Activists say the death toll from Syrian airstrikes in the Islamic State group's main city of Raqqa rose to at least 95 people. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says that Tuesday's attacks on an industrial area and popular market near the city's museum also injured at least 120 people. The Syrian Observatory says the dead include at least 52 civilians. It did not specify how many militants, if any, were killed. U.S. media report the U.S. Special Operations Forces have taken part in a rescue mission that freed eight hostages held by al-Qaeda militants in Yemen. The raid took place in an area where local tribes offer al-Qaeda militants protection near the Saudi border. Seven al-Qaeda members are killed and one Yemeni soldier is wounded in the rescue mission. Gunmen opened fire on a polio vaccination team in southwestern Pakistan Wednesday, killing at least four people and wounding several others. Police say that three female health workers are among the dead. The incident occurred in Quetta, the capital of Baluchistan province. South Asia leaders are meeting in Nepal for a summit seeking closer regional cooperation. Anjana Pasricha has details.
The vision spelled out by leaders of eight countries that make up the South Asian Association for Regional Cooperation in Kathmandu on Wednesday had a common thread: the need to combat poverty and terrorism by working more closely with each other. Saying that the reaction to SAARC is usually cynicism and skepticism, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi stressed the need to deepen integration in South Asia.
For India, our vision for the region rests on five pillars: trade, investment, assistance, cooperation in every area, contact between our people, and all through seamless connectivity. This is the call of our times.
But with no progress by India and Pakistan in breaking the ice between them, critics questioned how South Asia can become more integrated. Hopes that the SAARC meeting in Nepal would set the stage for a thaw between the region's two countries have failed to materialize so far. The Indian Prime Minister was to meet heads of all countries on the Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
The official death toll from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is now 5,689. The latest figures from the World Health Organization comes amid signs the spread of the virus is slowing but has not stopped. The UN agency says the number of newly reported cases is stable in Guinea and stable or declining in Liberia, but may still be increasing in Sierra Leone, which accounted for two-thirds of all new cases. Following the recent UN resolution condemning the dire human rights situation in North Korea, the South Korean parliament is now considering taking action. Brian Padden reports.
The two major political parties in South Korea have diametrically opposed views on North Korea. The ruling conservative Saenuri Party supports cautious dealings with the Kim Jong-un regime. The bill it is sponsoring in parliament would provide funding for North Korean human rights and civics groups operating in South Korea and would empower the Justice Ministry to document human rights violations in North Korea. The more liberal New Politics Alliance for Democracy Party believes that outside agitation and condemnation will only further isolate the regime. Brian Patton, Seoul.
President Barack Obama pardoned one of two Thanksgiving turkeys, sparing it from the dinner table and granting it the chance to live out its days in a Northern Virginia turkey farm. In a White House appearance, also attended by his two daughters Wednesday, Mr. Obama granted a pardon to a turkey named Cheese, a rotund white bird with a rosy-colored head and neck that will always be there. The move came on the eve of the annual Thanksgiving holiday. That's it for this edition of International Edition. Follow us 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Business news on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson, along with Ira Melman. Stocks ended higher Wednesday as the Dow and S&P 500 each hit new closing highs and the tech sector rallied. The Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed to a new record 17,827. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index up fractionally to 2072. And the NASDAQ Composite Index gained slightly to end at 4787.
Market gains were initially kept in check as investors digested a mixed batch of economic reports on consumer spending, durable goods, good orders, jobless claims, and home sales. The stock market in the United States will be closed Thursday for the Thanksgiving holiday and will close early at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, if anybody ever shows up for it.
Crude oil futures extended their slide Wednesday, ending at a four-year low on expectations the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries will not move to significantly cut oil production. Saudi Arabia's oil minister indicated he would not push for a cut in production targets. At the cartel's closely watched meeting in Vienna on Thursday, the Wall Street Journal reporting that news. Other news reports also indicated that a cut was not likely.
Well, Amazon has cut the price for its Fire smartphone just ahead of the Black Friday weekend as it seeks to sell a lot of slow-moving inventory. The phone is now available for $199 without a carrier contract. That price includes a one-year Prime membership, typically costing $99 a year. That's a $250 price cut from the Fire's original price when it launched in July. Amazon, which entered the smartphone market much farther behind market leaders Apple and Google, has been having difficulties selling that telephone, obviously. That's a look at international business news on the Voice of America.
It's VOA Global. Jim Stevenson here, along with Ira Melman.
Coming up, we are going to hear a very nice piece that was put together in our New York bureau about what people think about the Thanksgiving holiday, which in much of the world is now underway already. We're a little earlier than that here in Washington. But nevertheless, what Thanksgiving is all about and what it means to give thanks, and also what Bill Gates has to do. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Thursday is Thanksgiving Day in America, a time for family and friends to gather for a traditional feast. But as its name implies, Thanksgiving is also an opportunity for Americans to reflect on the gifts and blessings in their lives and to express gratitude for them. VOA's Adam Phillips took to the streets to ask some of his fellow New Yorkers what they're grateful for and what they think gratitude is.
At a cafe on Manhattan's Upper West Side, just days before Thanksgiving, a young woman named Sue says she's grateful for New York.
I was in Boston for the last 8 years, and I just moved back this September, and I am loving it, being with my family and meeting new friends, so I'm having a great time in New York.
Meanwhile, Christopher, a newspaper editor, muses about what gratitude is.
It means to be thankful and to realize that the good that you have in the world doesn't come from you, but it is given to you. And so the fact that I'm alive, I'm grateful for. And if you begin there, you realize that you really have to be grateful for everything that you have. I'm grateful that I live in a country that is not at war here, that there are not bombs going off where I live.
Jonah, a Columbia University graduate student, also feels thankful.
Feeling it and expressing it lead to, at least for me, very different reactions on my part. I think it actually, in some sense, takes courage to express real gratitude to somebody. I mean, we say thank you to people all the time, that we're grateful for this and for that, but it almost requires opening yourself up and being a little vulnerable to really express a full, deep gratitude about something.
Ben has a more political take on the season. He says he's grateful to anyone that enhances one's possibility for a better life, and that's why he's grateful for President Barack Obama.
It's a wonder to have a person who has a sense of possibility when it comes to politics, and yet is not defined by his determination to manipulate people. It's a very strange capacity to, on the one hand, have capacity to imagine the world larger than just sort of using people, and yet at the same time understand what you need to do to get things done. I have an African-American son, so that might have some partly to do with it. It's just grace. It makes my kid feel like he's, you know, part of America.
Whether it's because a world figure looks like you or because the apple pie is still warm, gratitude for our many gifts is what makes Thanksgiving a day of the spirit as well as the stomach for Americans worldwide. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Bill Gates, one of the world's leading inventors, businessmen, and donors, says philanthropy, like technology, depends on innovation for best results. Gates said that most innovation is driven by private enterprise, but that only governments can make broader social improvements. Shladika Hoke has more.
Gates told an audience at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington that his philanthropic work is focused on areas that governments cannot cover.
There are things in terms of trying out social programs in innovative ways that government is just, because of the way the job incentives work, they're not going to try out new designs like philanthropy can.
But Gates says philanthropy cannot substitute the government in achieving wider societal improvements in areas such as public health, education, employment, and others.
When you want to give every child in America a good education or make sure they're not starving, that's got to be government, because philanthropy isn't there day in and day out serving the entire population.
Gates said philanthropy depends on research and innovation in seeking solutions for societal problems. But he said it is the government's role to work for an overall better society. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You can hear American Cafe every day at voanews.com and on numerous podcast platforms. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. For the past 32 years, a group of doctors have been voluntarily restoring smiles to people across the world. Operation Smile, as it's known, was founded in 1982 by Dr. Bill and Kathleen McGee. It has operated on nearly 250,000 children born with cleft lips or palates. All of the doctors are volunteers. For the past 25 years, Operation Smile has been restoring the smile to children in Vietnam. The organization recently marked that milestone by operating on hundreds of children simultaneously in five different locations in Vietnam. Bill McGee told the Reuters news agency that it's a privilege to help others.
Every day in medicine, we get the privilege to put our hand on another person's shoulder and make their problem our problem, to show them love. If we can learn to do that more, and every time in our lives, every day of our lives, we'll be happier people, and we'll make other people happier people.
Scientists do not know what causes cleft palate, but some believe it could be a combination of genetic and environmental factors. The organization is using technology to help fight the condition. Each child has a medical record in a data system on the cloud that is geotagged to help doctors learn about their treatment. Ruben Ayala is Operation Smile's Senior Vice President of Health Affairs.
It's good to be able to treat a kid, but if you prevent it altogether, that's even better. So with technology, we're able to learn from our patients. Our patients have a richness of lessons that they can give us. So if we know that the genes that are on a cleft lip and palate patient are only triggered by specific things, then I'm able to prevent those things.
For Bill McGee, the program helps not only the patients, but also the doctors.
We've got to get back to the basics of what makes us feel good. And that's what, to me, Operation Smile is. It's just using our talent to help somebody else have a little smile on their face.
Operation Smile's website says that 1 in 700 children worldwide is born with cleft palate. A child born with the condition can suffer from breathing problems as well as have difficulty eating or speaking. There are also cultural prejudices against many of these children, but Operation Smile's work changes all that. Dogs are often called man's best friend, but a new study could make that bond last even longer. Researchers at the University of Washington are testing the anti-rejection drug rapamycin in dogs to see if it slows the aging process. Matthew Kaeberlein is one of the researchers. He told Reuters the tests in mice have been very promising.
It's not just lifespan that's extended, but many age-related declines in function are also improved by rapamycin. So cardiac function is improved, cancer seems to be delayed, immune function, at least to some extent, is improved, cognitive function is improved. So it's not only that the mice are living longer, they're healthier longer into later age.
The drug works by targeting a protein that regulates how rapidly cells reproduce. It also increases cells' ability to manage and recycle waste, and that will help slow the aging process. Co-researcher Daniel Promislow says that the wide variety of dog breeds in the world will help researchers take into account a wide variety of genetic differences.
One of the amazing things about dogs is that they are more variable than any species on the planet. All you have to do is put a Great Dane and a Chihuahua side by side, and even a little kid can tell you, yes, this is an incredibly variable species.
Kaeberlein says that his study could prove to be a game changer in the area of preventive medicine.
This is a much more efficient approach to promoting health than waiting until people are sick with the disease and then trying to treat the disease at that point.
Researchers hope if the tests in mice and dogs are successful, that human trials could be in the near future. So what do you think? Let us know your opinion on these stories by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. We're going to check sports in just a moment. And there's a word or the name of an office in England, and it's almost Monty Python-ish to me. It's called the Serious Fraud Office.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and but the story is kind of serious, so we'll get to it in just a moment as we check sports on the Voice of America. From the Voice of America, we check sports. A criminal investigation into allegations of World Cup bidding corruption could be opened in Britain, with authorities urging whistleblowers to come forward with information. The Serious Fraud Office is pursuing every reasonable line of inquiry, including working closely with appropriate overseas authorities, according to the government department that sent a letter to a British legislator. The Swiss Attorney General has already received a criminal complaint from FIFA against possible lawbreaking by unnamed individuals mentioned in the investigation into the 2018 and 22 World Cup bidding process that resulted in Russia hosting the 2018 World Cup and Qatar the 2022 tournament.
The governing body of basketball suspended the Japan Basketball Association Wednesday, a decision that will prevent the country's national teams from taking part in the Olympics and other international competitions. FIBA said the suspension results from the JBA's failure to merge the 22-team Basketball Japan League and the 13-team National Basketball League, which is in violation of its general statutes. FIBA's executive committee will send a representative to Japan to set up a task force that will be in charge of helping the JBA implement necessary reforms.
Lionel Messi scored 3 goals to shatter the Champions League record, scoring record, as Barcelona won 4-0 at Apoel. Messi took his career tally to 74 with his 5th Champions League hat-trick in 91 matches.
The National Basketball Association is in full swing. Stephen Curry scored 40 points to help the Golden State Warriors beat the Miami Heat 114-97 late Tuesday. That was their 6th consecutive victory. The Nuggets topped the Bulls 114-109. The Hawks over the Wizards 106-102. The Kings down the Pelicans 99-89. And the Bucks topped the Pistons 98-86.
Well, the Knicks, New York Knicks forward Carmelo Anthony has been out, all but ruled out of Wednesday's game against the Mavericks due to painful back spasms. The Knicks coach Derek Fisher said Anthony was making some progress, but not enough. Anthony left Monday's loss to the Houston Rockets late in the first half with back spasms. He did not return.
That's a look at sports on VOA Global.
Well, what's happening on the music scene, you might ask? Would you ask that?
I would ask that, Ira. What's happening?
Well, next year, legendary artist and producer Giorgio Moroder will release his first new album in 30 years. Some details of the project have been announced, including its superstar lineup of guests. They include Britney Spears, Sia, Charlie XCX, and Kylie Minogue. The album's first single is entitled 74 is the New 24. Can't wait to hear it. Moroder said in a statement, "Dance music doesn't care where you live. It doesn't care who your friends are. It doesn't care how much money you make. It doesn't care if you're 74 or if you're 24, because 74 is the new 24. Let's give a listen.
74 is the new 24.
74 is the new 24, Giorgio Moroder's new song. Be sure to join us tomorrow on VOA Global as Ray McDonald will count down the top five singles of the week.
Wasn't that exciting to listen to? Speaking of exciting, did you ever review a hotel stay? You know, after you stay at a hotel,
right,
like on TripAdvisor or something
like
that?
You can go online and tell them how your stay was.
I've done that, but I haven't done it if it's negative because you just don't want to do that. Well, a couple has been fined 100 British pounds by a Blackpool hotel after they wrote an internet review describing it as a rotten, stinking hovel run by Muppets.
I want to see the Muppet part.
Yeah, Tony and Jan Jenkinson stayed at the Broadway Hotel in August, were so disappointed with their accommodation that they took the TripAdvisor to share their experience. They later found their credit card had been charged 100 pounds for the hotel, stating its policy was to charge for bad reviews. Policy included a booking document reportedly saying, "Despite the fact that repeat customers and couples love our hotel, your friends and family may not. For every bad review left on any website, the group organizer will be charged a maximum 100-pound review." However, the Blackpool politicians, the city council there, now say it understands that the hotel, after much publicity, as you might imagine, will refund the couple's money and scrap their policy.
I guess that's the fine print that you should read, but the fine print that they're going to eliminate now.
Yeah, that's just about it. Well, if you are celebrating Thanksgiving, and you might, if you're an expatriate, if you're living in the United States or whatever, enjoy yourself and give thanks for what you have.
We'd like to thank several people involved in our show. Zubir was our technical engineer for the day, Tracy Carter, our producer, and Diane Gao, our managing editor.
That's what you...
Yes.
Okay. Have a great day, everybody.
For Ira Melman, I'm Jim Stevenson. Bye.
Bye.